Hey, it's Motley Fool Money co-host Dylan Lewis here. If you're listening to us, it's because you love following the stock market and learning about business stories. If you're looking to keep learning and unlocking your potential, then you should check out the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast produced by our friends over at the Stanford Graduate School of Business. Think Fast, Talk Smart is the Webby Award-winning best business podcast that's received nearly 43 million downloads and is the number one career podcast in 95-plus countries, so you know it's worth your time. Each week, host and Stanford lecturer Matt Abraham sits down with experts to discuss the best tips to hone and develop your communication skills, from making small talk that leaves a big impression, to keeping your nerves in check while speaking, to being more persuasive. Whether you're working on your elevator pitch or planning an important meeting, strong communication skills are important in business and life in general. That's why you'll hear from pros like neuroscientist Andrew Huberman on how to manage speaking anxiety, as well as speechwriter, best-selling author, and friend of the Fool, Dan Pink, on how to take risks in your communication, and psychologist Kelly McGonigal on how to harness nervous energy to fuel powerful presentations. All that and so much more available on the Think Fast, Talk Smart podcast. So what are you waiting for? Listen every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube.
I call it like it would be your pet, you know, like your pet dog, you know, like something you love and cares for you. And then I think the brands have to have their own AIs. And I think these AIs connect. And so that's where we look at it, we call it the digital twin, is that ultimately the brands have a digital twin of you as a representation of how you engage with their brand. And when your digital twin shows up, it can connect with theirs and they will get things done for you.
I'm Mary Long, and that's Rob LoCascio, founder and CEO of LivePerson, a tech company that uses artificial intelligence to help brands talk to their customers. If you've been on a web chat with a customer service bot, you've probably used its technology. Ricky Mulvey caught up with LoCascio to talk about why your interactions with companies could soon change drastically, how LoCascio is navigating a stock price drop of more than 90% while also facing an activist campaign threatening his job, and the ways natural language processing could transform how we communicate with, wait for it, animals. It's going to get pretty weird, but it is a very fun ride.
Right now, going into 2023, what are some of the use cases for LivePerson's products? Where could I specifically have encountered it?
Sure. So we provide all the messaging AI platforms for some of the largest brands in the world. So if you're on Delta Airlines or Verizon or United Healthcare or Home Depot and you're messaging or chatting, that's our platforms.
I was going to ask where you kind of fit in the competitive landscape with call centers and other AI chat products, maybe even companies like Twilio.
Yeah, so we were the first out 7 years ago. We pioneered the messaging platform. And my goal back then, still holds today, is that I want to get rid of the traditional 800 number. I used to kill the 800 number. I just think this idea of talking by voice, pressing 1, 2, 3, and what we call an IVR should be gone. And that's what I've been after for the last 7 years. Messaging went a long way. We added a lot of AI into it. But now with generative AI, like there's a path now to kill it once and for all.
Well, and part of that path for you involves this new product where voice is back into calling and in humans speaking with essentially AI chatbots and getting real-time reaction.
Obviously, all the generative AI stuff makes it the machine understand natural language better than ever before. The other part of that is the data set that's going to power that. And the next part is the actions. Like I want to buy something. And there's got to be actions off of that, which generative AI in itself doesn't quite do that. And that's where we also provide actions so you can buy and get service and support.
And with your new products, it seems that almost the 800 number might be back a little bit where people, humans, are able to interact real time over voice with AI chatbots for customer service applications.
Yeah, we just launched our new voice AI and platform, and that's really what I believe will be the final attack on the thing I've wanted to get rid of, which is traditional voice where you're sitting on hold and you're talking to a human. We are now offering voice AI to use large language models and generative AI to power those conversations. So it's really fascinating. Like what we're finding is that we looked at our top airlines. People ask the craziest questions. Like people are asking, can I bring an iguana on a plane? And in the past, you can never make a traditional bot that would handle Iguana. You would never even think about making that. But with the large language models, it just picks it up because of the data set. And that's why there's going to be a massive shift. And I promise everyone out there, you won't have to talk to a human agent on a voice call soon. We'll get rid of it.
Can you bring an iguana on an airplane?
Well, it turns out for one airline, if it's 45 pounds and below, yes. For another airline, you cannot bring an iguana on. So they have different policies about iguanas, funny enough.
So do you see that even for harder use cases? I mean, I'm thinking back to a chat I had with United. I forgot my password and I forgot some of the answers to those security questions. You're saying that you could build a product that doesn't that involves no interaction between me and a person for even that kind of difficult situation.
Yeah, and they're one of our customers. So we do a bunch of different use cases there on messaging and automation. But yeah, those are done. They may even be doing those. I don't know. But I know they do booking reservations, changing seats. I think password resets are in there. But yeah, all of that can be done. We don't need to talk to humans anymore to get that done.
Well, I hope we talk to humans sometimes. One thing on your generative AI products that was mentioned in your product launch is that it can do real-time fact-checking, which is something that ChatGPT has a lot of problems with. How is this possible and, more importantly, provable for your product?
Yeah, so because we're in the enterprise, we call it enterprise AI, EAI. This is a very specific type of AI. This AI, you know, has to be at the highest form of trust, and the data sets and our platform and the models all have to work together to give a great outcome. So we have things in our platform that'll check, for instance, you may have conflicting answers. Well, that needs to get flagged. And we can put a human in the loop then to say that's the right answer. So the beauty of our platform, though, is that it's humans that generated the conversations originally. And usually those humans, the agents at the contact center, they're trained and they respond appropriately. So the quality of our data set, we have over 1 billion conversations we generate a year. That quality data set is what ultimately helps us drive AI into the enterprise. Get them back into the model. And fact check. And the model say, that's not true. You say, is this true? And the model say, no. So you use prompts to then do the fact checking on it. So we have to do a lot of tooling in order to make this stuff work for the enterprise. It's not a straight API call.
Part of this is a part of what I would describe, and you've described, is Live Nation's, Live Person's. That was a bad one. Part of this is a part of Live Person's, what you would describe is a turn, an inflection point. You mentioned this in your previous call, and as shareholders may know, that the stock is down more than 90% from 2021 highs. Can you provide some color on what it means for you and your company to be at an inflection point?
Yeah, I mean, I've been through this a lot, and the company's had a different legs in its journey. We had when we launched chat, made it through the .com. We launched messaging first time, then added AI into it. So it's the same thing here. I did a big restructuring of the company to sort of get us aligned to the biggest opportunity that we've been waiting for 28 years, the ability for a machine to power these conversations at scale. And so we did a lot of cleanup. We actually got rid of a bunch of revenue and businesses that we don't think are pertinent to what we need to do. And when this appeared, it was like, we got to be ready to go for it. And so I think we're in one of the best positions right now to win the enterprise AI space, because we've got, you know, over 3,000 customers, 500 are enterprises. We got this amazing data set. We've got the technology. We've got models. We already have trust to deliver this to our customers. So I feel really strong about our position. And there's like 10 of us in the world that are doing this, that are really bringing this technology to life and making money off of it. So that's what's kind of unique.
So when you describe getting rid of some of those spinoff brands, I believe one of them is Kasamba, which was allowed people to connect with fortune tellers across the globe. You've said that now you're focusing on recurring revenues. Is there more to that than just getting rid of some of those consumer facing spinoffs?
Yeah, we had some, we call it a gain share labor business where we provide the contact center labor. We had a business related to COVID and COVID testing and AI. So there were some businesses during the COVID period that came in that lasted and came off. And so those are the ones we kind of moved out. We sold the consumer business called Kasamba. It's about experts doing chat. There's psychics, but there's also like tech support and all that. but it was very much a chat business, not an AI business. So we kind of looked at the portfolio and we said, what can power AI? And that's what we doubled down on. And we want to basically also run our company profitably and generate cash off the core. And that's also, you know, something that we're achieving now in Q2. The core business is now generating positive EBITDA. And that's a very important thing for us.
Positive EBITDA, but your company has still had some issues finding profitability on an operating basis, the profit from your core business. For investors really looking at that operating profit, without dates, we don't like not projections, but what's the story where LivePerson becomes profitable on an operating basis?
Yeah, like I said, the core business is starting to generate cash. We have a AI healthcare business that's a 100% grower. It's a big grower. And we're investing in that is taking down some of our ability to generate cash. But by year end, all of that will be generating cash. So we feel good. Once again, we look at the core businesses generating cash. We have an investment in a high growth business, which is called Wild Health. And then those combined by year end will be generating cash.
I want to move on to some trends. I do have to address one elephant in the room, and I understand if you can't respond to it. An open letter recently came out from Peter Feld in Starboard Value, looking at the 13Fs. I believe this hedge fund has about a 9% stake in your company.
They actually don't anymore. They sold it off.
So they sold it.
They have about 3% now. They've been selling over the last few months, so they do not have a 9%. Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate that color because sometimes things change between December 31 and May 10th. But the value firm does have some issues with the company. It wants to introduce a new board. It wants you, frankly, out of the company you founded. It said, quote, "While we expressed a strong belief that LivePerson needed a change of CEO, the board insisted that it was committed to Mr. LoCascio, as if it felt that LivePerson was finally well-positioned for success after years of challenges. Moreover, the company's stockholder-unfriendly staggered board structure prohibited us from pursuing a level of change that would have resulted in a change in a majority of the board," end quote. It points out poor financial performance, troubling Glassdoor reviews, a loss of business focus. I'm going to stop there and just clear the floor. If you have a response, I also understand that you may not be able to.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, we actually settled with them last year, strangely enough. And then we, half the board is new board members. So we actually made changes. We restructured the company and got it to a place that I think most shareholders are pretty happy with. Stock's up today. We talked about the final restructuring, getting to profitability, positive EBITDA. This is what we did for 20 years. You know, we ran a company generating cash and we needed to get there. So I think we've done a lot of work that our shareholders want, and we've made a fair amount of change, and now we're just focused on growth. So, and I think that's what it's all about, being focused on growth.
Growth in where? In terms of gaining profitability, revenue, operating profit?
Well, you know, we have a 75% gross margin stuff. So we have a good, strong business, and we have a positive EBITDA business and we'll generate cash as an overall business shortly. But it's about profitable growth. If I could go back and change something during COVID grew our business tremendously. Like every contact center shut down, they needed automation. We're there with the product and the platform. We'd envisioned that, but we basically invested like it would continue going because we're in the middle of it. It looked like that, and it didn't. It came down, as we all know. So we needed to recalibrate, and we recalibrated quite quickly. But for 20 years, we generated cash flow in the company and positive margins. And that's how we've been here for 20 something years. So that's really the focus of the business. I don't want to break that rule again. I won't. It just doesn't make for a strong company. And we got here and we'll continue forward with generating, you know, positive cash flow and EBITDA.
All right. I want to move on to some fun and weird stuff, if that's okay with you, Rob. One thing I've been looking into lately, I started reading this book by Michio Kaku. It's called Quantum Supremacy. And it's the idea that computers now are based on just ones and zeros. And there's a direct limit for what we can do in terms of artificial intelligence and conversations. Fact checking, there's massive implications in terms of biology, energy, you name it. I'm going to give LivePerson a working quantum computer.
Oh, yeah.
What would you do with it?
I think it's interesting because if you think about like GPUs, and there's a limitation right now on what we can process with these models. So I'm kind of in the same place you are, where the energy and the bottleneck is a GPU and how it works. And so I do think that there's probably a different way to do it. It may be quantum computing. I know there's a lot of focus on it right now because it is a bottleneck for getting us to scale these systems on a really good cost basis. So yeah, I guess if I had one, I would rework the model to be able to use a quantum computer to generate the outcome and the conversation. So I don't know if anyone's trying to crack the code on that right now, or they're just programming for GPUs.
No, IBM, Google, I think it's sort of, well, you have the software race with artificial intelligence, natural language processing. There's I would say a quieter hardware race.
Yeah.
To get to that quantum supremacy.
Yeah, I'm in a venture capital fund, and they picked some kids out of Harvard. There's like two guys who are thinking of something different on a different than a GPU to power this stuff. So I agree. It's like human beings have a pretty good result in breaking out of the limitation. And I think this is the biggest limitation we have right now. I mean, the other part is that, you know, many years ago when I started the company, there's like three forms of input output for a human. There's typing, which is the internet represents that, text and typing. There's talking and speech, which we're seeing right now. And then there's thought. And thought is the fastest process to gaining access to information and processing. When you think and you have to speak, that's pretty quick. When you have to type and think, that's slow. So that's why we naturally like to talk to machines. It's easier for us. But the next place is obviously the idea that I could have a thought, and that thought can basically come back with a response. And when you think about thought, most thought is in a conversation. Like, we think in conversations, right? So it's important that what we're doing now will be something for our future. I don't know if I'll ever see it in my life, although I know Elon Musk is working on it. I don't know if I'll ever see it in practice.
The Neuralink, it's sort Neuralink, of yeah. almost and a you, co-pilot for thinking.
And we have to have that. Like, all this will be, you know, helping us be better at what we do. But I think that's where it's ultimately going to go.
Your company focuses on chatting in customer service and professional in professional ways. There's another company that's private, but it does, I would say, some similar technology in terms of voice AI and chat AI for personal relationships. It's called Replica, and yeah. Basically, it started as a mental health application for people who were lonely during COVID, and they would introduce a partner for you to talk to. And then slowly, a lot of the relationships would become more flirtatious, and then the user would be able to essentially buy an artificial intelligence partner. It became more explicit in terms of romantically, and then people were feeling huge bonds. This was their girlfriend, their boyfriend, and then there was a huge tech switch where Replica basically turned off the romantic functions, and people were deeply depressed by this. People were lashing out. Understandably, they changed the personality of something that they loved. You're in this space. I wanted to get your take on the Replica story, and maybe just the human relationships with AI, and if there needs to be boundaries set.
And I mean, I've been thinking. I mean, the reason I feel like I'm here on Earth is to, and my purpose in life, at least on the product side, is to bring something like this to life. I think the machine has to be empathetic and loving and caring, and we have to trust it. So I do think this is important. And I've often, one of the goals in the company is like develop a Her. You remember the movie Her?
Yeah.
Better it's than Her.
Joaquin Phoenix is in a movie, and there's a chatbot voiced by Scarlett Johansson, and Joaquin ends up falling deeply in love with the chatbot.
That's correct. And that, you know, well, in the end, it's kind of like she's also everyone else's kind of lover.
Yeah.
She finds out. So not so good. But I think in the end, the consumers have to own their own AIs. We have to own an AI that's ours, that's not given to us from a company. It may be like it is given to us, but it's ours. The data is ours. We train it. We have control over it. We name it. And I think ultimately that's where we need to go in the world. And that's kind of my vision.
So. And so this AI that you would own, I want to build out the vision for that. That's someone that could be maybe you would say a romantic partner, a professional assistant, a friend? What is the purpose of having that sort of, I'll say for lack of a better term, spirit animal?
Right, exactly. That's really what is important, is that spirit animal. I call it like it'd be your pet, you know, like your pet dog, you know, like something you love and cares for you. And then I think the brands have to have their own AIs. And I think these AIs connect. And so that's where we look at it, we call it the digital twin, is that ultimately the brands have a digital twin of you as a representation of how you engage with their brand. And when your digital twin shows up, it can connect with theirs, and they will get things done for you. And that's where I think this all goes. Brand has their connective twin, you have yours, and they're an arbiter. They communicate with each other and they get things done for you.
I'm literally having trouble envisioning this. What does it mean to, like, what is a task or something that a brand and my digital twin, which I'm still scared
to meet? I mean, I can do one. Like I had a, you know, I just, with my healthcare company, I just, you know, had a filling replaced, and they said it was an unnecessary thing, and my filling fell out, and it's $500 and they don't want to pay it. And I haven't had the time to even bother with it. And I'm really, you know, like, I know what it's going to, the pain of calling of this company. So my digital twin, I should be able to say, like, here's the stuff that I'll give you to prove the point that this was necessary, and go take care of it for me. And they would, and that would take place, because a lot of the big companies like healthcare, banking, telco, we all have this in our life, and these have the large contact centers and a lot of complexity to how to manage with them. And so the ability to do that easily and have my digital twin communicate with the digital twin at their company and get that done for me, that's really the key. You know, that's really the key I see in life.
So I think that would be, I think that sounds great. I think the difficult thing though is to make sure.
That's what I'm trying to do, by the way. We're trying to bring that to life in our company.
Trying to bring it to life. And I think the thing that is difficult is almost making sure the digital twin stays as a pet, and not almost the person becomes subservient to the digital twin. And I don't know how you would build that boundary in place, but that seems, in addition to creating an immortal digital version of yourself, that would seem to be two difficult obstacles.
Well, I just synthesized my voice. And it took about 300 training phrases to do it. And then I'm loading in all my knowledge, like all the written word. And there's a lot out there that I've done in my life, like these interviews. And I'm loading it in, loaded in my Wikipedia page. And it's on our platform, because you can load in all your data on our platform, even Wikipedia stuff. And now you can talk to it, and you can ask it questions. And so in reality, when I'm not here anymore and my kids want to talk to me, or maybe my kids, they can, talk to their great-great-grandfather. And something's interesting about that. And that's what I'm trying to achieve. I think this creates not immortality, but some form of, you've left yourself behind in a
digital form.
In a digital form that's real. Like my mom's still alive. She's 83, and I want to do this with her. You know, she'll not be here one day, but it'd be great if my kids could say, you know, Grandma, can you read me a bedtime story? And that's possible. So it's exciting.
We're not far away from it.
No,
I don't know if I'm delighted or terrified, Rob.
Good. Well, the terrified part is if somebody tries to replicate you and use it in nefarious ways. You know, if I take the video off and it's not me talking, this could be pretty bad. So I think security wise. So I think there's this whole other part that has to get solved. But we're close now to doing things like this.
And what it means if a brand really knows my digital twin, and maybe some marketing tactics, some privacy restrictions. I think that's huge.
That's correct. Yeah.
I want to dive into, I was presented with three industries where generative AI is going to be a game changer, maybe in the more near future. We already talked healthcare, retail, and travel. Those are two where I see, I am a little less clear on the implications of generative AI. You pick one and then we'll dive into it.
Retail is an interesting one. We showed a demo when we just kicked off our new generative AI products that you call in. And you're talking to this AI and you're asking it for questions. Our example is said, I want to get my mom a gift and she's 80 years old or whatever. And it says, oh, I recommend these gifts. It's like, oh yeah, she loves jewelry. And then we went down and down into that tree and then said, oh, I think she likes pearls. And then we said, send us a picture, and it sends your picture right to your phone. So you're looking at it on your phone, the picture of it. They're like, oh, that looks cool. Can you give me something that's between this price range? And that was all done really easily. And it's all real. This is not fake stuff. This is what our platform can do. And then you can say, buy it. I'd like to buy it. And so on the retail side, it's going to allow for, I think, a different level of discovery. Because right now it's like web. And webs are like searching in categories or stuff. But you kind of make up the category. It's like, you just say, my mom, 80 years old, lives in New York. You know, help me. And it can go, well, based on that. The other thing we did is, I'll tell you, we did another thing is that we downloaded like my WhatsApp messages with my wife, and we tested like, I want to get my wife a gift. I'm traveling. It said, oh, your wife loves horses. Yes. I've got some ideas. Great. And then I was in London. I was like, well, where can I buy those? And so it's really interesting. If you can let the AI get in the middle of those conversations, it can think of things that you may not even think of. And I think that's pretty interesting.
So in retail, it would maybe like it fits in as a personal shopper.
As a personal shopper and discovery. And I think the discovery elements are so much more detailed. Like if you look at Google today and you put in, I go in there and put, I want to buy a gift for my 82-year-old mother, grandma. It's going to give me all this BS websites like gifts for mom, you know.
Yeah.
And then you're going to get dropped on some other retail site. But the true, what's great about it is it went from like flowers, yoga mat, jewelry. It picked these things that are very disparate. But for that age group, it was like right on. And then I was like, okay, cool. And then I said, jewelry. And it's like, what does she like? She likes pearls. And we went down that road and then went down pricing. So it's really hard to do that with like the AI previous to generative. And it's hard to do that on search and stuff like that.
Well, is the reason it's tough on search because you're filtering through ads?
Yeah.
And there's, but to me, like there's no reason that you couldn't introduce ads into the AI platform, right? Like if you're a brand and you have, if you have Rob's digital twin, hey, I'm out here selling shoes. Let me present this to Rob at the right place in the right time.
Right. And that's ultimately, we know Google's going to put, you know, like they announced today, they want to put, generative AI into their search. Microsoft's doing it with Bing. So yeah, I think ultimately discovery, is going to be very different. And then once it understands the digital twin, and once again, I put in information now in my conversations with my wife, I'm putting in these very personal conversations saying, figure it out. It figured it out. And that's now I wouldn't give that to Google. I definitely wouldn't hand that to Google, that information. So how do I get this localized with my called digital twin? You know,
I want to talk about one other kind of weird angle with AI that has my attention. I know that you, we talked about this a little bit in the pre-interview where I think you have an opinion on it, but one with natural language processing that I don't think is getting enough attention is interspecies communication. I think this is going to be the equivalent of the atom bomb or the internet if/when it happens. And a lot of what's being discovered was already known by indigenous peoples. This is a lot of renewed discovery. But now because of these language processing programs, we know how animals talk in much greater detail. Like we know that bats speak in motherese to their young. They change their pitch when they're talking to a little bat, and that bats distinguish between genders. This was known a while ago, but the bees can wiggle and show other bees exactly where to pollinate. And then you can have robotic bees come into a hive and then show them pollination sites. But it can get much darker. You know, you can imagine a fishing boat saying, hey, tuna, hey, school of tuna, get over here. It used for precision hunting. Your thoughts on this unlock, am I overstating it?
It really isn't something I've been thinking about. I know you brought it up at the beginning, but I do think it's quite clever. The translation between beings and how we translate obviously will have a key part because there's a lot of good and bad that can happen with that. So I thought when you brought it up, it's quite fascinating if we could truly understand, and I guess in some cases we do, the language of another, you know, species. So I don't know what will happen with it. It'll always start with pets. The pet market is so frothy. So like it's going to start with, can we communicate with our pets better and understand, let them understand us better? It's pretty cool if you could really get your dog to understand like what you're feeling, you know, and what you needed to do. But it'll be interesting. I think the pet market, it's probably be a pet market thing because that has billions of dollars into it. That's how, usually commercially things drive things, you know.
I was talking to a longtime fool, Matt Greer, about this. And the thing is I don't think you want to know what your pets think. Because it's probably not as cheery as what you'd like it to believe.
No, and you know the old joke, like there's aliens looking on Earth and they see humans basically walking dogs and picking up their poop. And they're like, wow, look at these species. They have these people who pick up their poop. They must be really advanced. So it's like, maybe the dogs run the show, you know?
As always, people on the program may have interests in the stocks they talk about. And The Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy stocks based solely on what you hear. I'm Mary Long. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.